morning, Roxy Soxy.
Good morning, Tam Tam. How
it has
are
been
you?
The shit show. A morning. I don't even know where to begin. And I feel like everything just happens in threes for me. So I don't know if that's the case for you, but it has been a nightmare a few days. How about you?
Yeah, it's pretty much been a nightmare. We've had a death in my husband's family this week.
I heard about that. I'm sorry.
Thank you. My husband's father passed away, although he did pass away at the ripe age of 96. So he led a very good life and only towards the end kind of went down. So we're thankful that he had a great, very active life most of his life. Mm. So, but it's just never easy. Death is never, it's not,
it's
you know,
never,
no matter. Right. No matter how old you are or the person who is dying is, it's never easy,
right.
You know? So we're kind
of. And I also feel like, you know, my birthday's coming up and it's kind of a big birthday. And like, it's the idea of like, I don't know, I'm having a lot of existential stuff come up. Like it's, I've been in therapy a lot the last couple of weeks. And it's just a question of like, you know, aging and where we fit in the world as we get older and women become, you know, there's a sense of us becoming more invisible and what is our meaning and purpose if it's not just, and I know that I know that our purpose is not just to make babies, but you know, when you start to go through perimenopause symptoms and then people then ultimately go through menopause, it's like, you feel like your body has said, well, I'm done now. Like I'm done for this youthful part of existence. And it's time to not be in that space. And that's been really difficult for me to like accept that my body's like slowing down and like, I don't know how many like eggs I have left. And we've had this conversation because I said to my husband, do I want another child? Or is it just that I feel like I'm getting older? You know what I mean? And then what happens when you get older and then you ultimately live out the rest of your life? Like that's a big, you know, that's a lot of thoughts that are going through my head when it comes to that.
Okay. So you're still kind of like undecided a little bit. Like you're not 100% one way or the other.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's about the kid. Like, like I was saying, I think it's more just about feeling like I'm getting older and what does that mean? You know, what does that mean for my reproductive system? What does that mean about for my life? And just like you said, like David's dad lived till 96, but you know, a lot of us don't get that. So how many years do we have left? You know, we don't know.
Yeah, it is. It really puts in perspective, like birthdays and deaths put in perspective, you know, like where you are in life. And it's almost like a recalibration, you know, and it's kind of letting go, I think, of the old, like, you know, because I'm sure, like, I don't know, for me, when I was younger, I kind of had these like numbers in mind and was like, okay, by this age, I'll have this, this, and this, or like, this is the point where I'll be in my life. And it's interesting because every year, you know, a birthday or somebody passing or something that happens really makes you like, you know, kind of gives you a kick in the butt a little bit, you know, it's like, okay, like this is life. And I was looking after, you know, my father-in-law passed away and I was scrolling through and I came across Eckhart Tolle, who is like this amazing, you know, speaker and author.
I love him.
Don't you love him? And he was saying, this moment right now is your life. And it will always be this moment. So whatever it is, like, I know we think so much in like future and even in past, you know, it's like, oh, well, I wish I would have done that or differently or something. It's like, no, your life is right now. It is this moment. And it's always going to be this moment. Like no matter how old you are or, you know, what life changes you go through. And it really like that really kind of woke me up too, because I was thinking, you know, I mean, as you do, you know, you think about things that have happened or you think about things, you know, that you want or like goals, and you should always have goals and things like that. But I just think it was so interesting the way he said it. He's like, your life is what it is right now. And it's always going to be this moment. You know,
you have to live in the present. You know, if you're always living in the past or in the future, you're going to be depressed or anxious. Like it just is. And I think this is a great segue to introduce our guest right now, because I know she's been through so much and she's actually died in real life. She actually, and for people who don't know her story, I think that, you know, this is going to open up a lot of questions, a lot of understanding about, something that happened to her. And also I have so many questions about did she feel anything when she was clinically dead? Mm-hmm. So, see, who do we have today?
Well, we have a lady who's been through so much. She's a mom. She's actually a nurse herself, and she's had three babies. And her last baby, it was like one of the most harrowing birth stories I have ever heard before in my life. Like you're saying, she actually died on the table, like was pronounced dead, you know, like, I mean, just actually went through that. So, you know, as soon as I heard the story and you and I were talking about her, you know, we had to know more. We had to know more of what goes on. And because she shared her story on TikTok and on social, she has massively blown up. So we want to hear more of her story. So please welcome Nicole Hall from Before You Push.
Woo! Yay. We're doing like a little clap because we're very excited to have you, but your story is also very harrowing. Yes. So we want people to be in the right headspace mm-hmm. for everything that's gone on. And I'm sure you've told your story so many times. And but every new person that hears it, I'm sure can, you know, you can give awareness and understanding of what you've been through and maybe to help mm-hmm. other women who have post-traumatic stress from also going through it and also what to look out for. So, yes. So I think the first question is, please, can you, for all the people that don't know your story, can you please share your story with us?
Yes. Absolutely. I want to tell y'all, thank y'all so much for just having me here. I'm like fangirling out with both of you. Oh,
wow. Wait, you just said y'all. So where are you from? Because Rux and I both have a little y'all in us.
Yeah, I'm from Texas, but I live in Colorado Springs.
Are you from I'm from Dallas.
Oh, okay. I'm from Amarillo.
Okay.
So at the top of Texas. So
yes.
I love Dallas.
I love that. Yeah, you're panhandle girl. And I'm North Texan.
Panhandle. Yes. So my third baby, crazy, because, you know, as a young, healthy 29-year-old, you would never think that would happen, you know? So a little background about myself, I've been a registered nurse for 11 years working in a history of pediatric ICU and the different areas of perioperative services. So pre-op, PACU, post-op. And we were going in to have our third baby. I typically have easy pregnancies, easy deliveries, and delivery day is my favorite part. You know, snuggles with this little newborn baby that you finally get to see the face of. And like I said, as a young 29-year-old mom, I had no warning signs or indications that my life would be at risk that day. So that morning we go in and I had a smooth labor process that morning. And I told my nurse, hey, you know, when I feel nauseous and hot, it's typically time to start pushing. And she said, okay, yeah, just let me know. And that's how it was with my other two babies. So why wouldn't it be the same with this one? Well, not too long after, I felt nauseous and hot. And she said, okay, I'll check you. And she checked me and she said, no, you're only a 6. And I thought in my head, that can't be right. That's when exactly at that time, my body had to have started to experience a life-threatening condition called an amniotic fluid embolism. My husband then said, he was standing right here on my right side, and he said, let me go grab you a cold washcloth. I'll be right back. And I thought in my head again, like, oh, that's not going to work, but oh, okay. And so they're getting me over onto my left side, you know, turning me over because you get better cardiac perfusion that way. And I started saying, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe until I couldn't say it anymore. And my husband then said, I started to turn red. I started foaming at my mouth. Mm-hmm. And then I turned blue. Well, the nurse hops on top of me instantly and starts chest compressions and loses an IV, but gets another one in me. And they're unplugging my hospital bed as fast as they can. And they're running it down to the OR. And they're moving me from my hospital bed to my OR table, and I lose another IV. So there I was, no IV, no anesthesia. I had no doctor and no pulse. Just time, right? My life was now just ticking on the clock.
Oh my goodness.
So they get me on there onto the table, and an ER doctor thankfully came to my code, which is not the norm, because at this specific hospital at where I was at, ER doctors were not required to go to in-house hospital codes. You know, they're too busy in the ER taking care of all the craziness in there. But he later told me that he felt something pulling him up out of his chair to get to me. So he says that he says that he casually just
like he didn't know that something was wrong. He just felt that he needed to get up.
He felt it. He said he felt later. He called me a week later and he said, I have to tell you the side of my story. He's like, something was pulling me to you.
Wow.
And if anything, I know that you said that I saved your life, but I've walked away from my faith. And if anything, you saved my life. And it was such a God like moment for me, because after all that, of course, I was angry with everything that happened, angry towards God, of course. So yeah, he ended up going with that feeling, and he walks to the elevator. He lets housekeeping on, goes up a couple of levels, lets housekeeping off. And he's just walking casually to the OR thinking, oh, I'll just be an extra set of hands, like no big deal. And when he walks into that OR room of mine, a nurse yells, you're the first doctor we've seen. She's been down for 5 minutes. You have to get this baby out right now. He picks up his pace. Well, where's her OB? We've paged him. He's still not here yet. And he's trying to feel for a pulse. He can't feel for a pulse. And that's when he yells, someone get me a fucking scalpel.
And is that what he said?
He said that. Exactly. Fucking...
And you're like, that's, you'll remember that line for the rest of your life.
Oh, I will. For his present, I made him a plaque and I have that engraved.
Yeah, get me a fucking scalpel. That's a great one.
Scalpel per, Dr. Motes. But yeah, now that hangs actually in the ER room. So all the medical professionals can see it. But he gets in there and, he yells, someone get me a fucking scalpel. And at this point, the OR room is going crazy. And, being in a code like that, there's a ton of people that are in there. Mm-hmm. And so if you can imagine, there's a lot of nursing staff in there just circling around, and an ICU nurse comes in and yells and calms the storm, thank God, and says, everyone stop. You do compressions. You give the epi. I'll get the IO, which is a drill gun into my bone, which is just quick IV access. And at this point, the ER doctor slices into me and my baby. And so, which happens during a code, it is normal. It can happen. And they're trying to work him out. They finally, get him out. And at that point, once they get him out, that's when I get a pulse and a blood pressure back. And he's holding down pressure. And he was saying that that's when my OB doctor and a trauma surgeon show up at the door. And he's trying to explain to them, hey, I don't know if I just hit an abdominal artery or what, but she just got a pulse and a blood pressure back. And so they come in to take over, and he told me that the next thing that he did was he just went to the bathroom to cry because he was covered in my blood and the amniotic fluid. And he said that he just sat there and cried because he thought that for the rest of my son's life, he would have to say that the day he got a scar was from the day his mom died. And he said, I honestly didn't think you were going to make it. He said, I've taken care of over 100,000 patients, and it's either one or the other in something like that. It's rarely ever both that make it. So during all of this, of course, let's don't forget about my husband. When all this craziness was going down, he was told that they were doing a post-mortem C-section and that I had expired. And they said, do you want to gown up and kiss her goodbye? And I thought in my head, Oh my God, post-mortem. Like what? It's technically it's a peri-mortem, but he was told post-mortem as if I had died already, you know? And so he's waiting, he's gowned up, ready to kiss me goodbye. And he's outside my OR room, I'm sure just, you know, pacing back and forth. And that's when a nurse pokes her head out and said, "Hey, we did just get a pulse and a blood pressure back on her. You don't want to go in there right now. I promise I'll keep you updated." And he, you know, falls to his knees, he says, and he's praying as hard as he can. And they're working as hard as they can to stabilize me. They thought that they thought the bleeding had stopped. So from the amniotic fluid embolism, I went into cardiac arrest. So I flatlined. I had no rhythm on the heart, on the monitor. And then I go into DIC, which is blood clotting and then excessive bleeding afterwards. So they're trying to replace my volume. And they thought they stabilized me. So they closed me back up and they do an x-ray just to see if they left anything inside me. Well, when they got the x-ray, they saw that they left a sponge inside and it ended up being saving grace. So when they opened me back up, they saw that I was still profusely bleeding. So as a young 29-year-old, they had to take my uterus. They tried to save it for the first, you know, the first go around. And then the second time it was a life or death situation. So they had no choice but to take it. And the ER doctor had sliced into my left ovary as well. So I just have one right ovary. And so once they, you know, they think they stabilized me enough, they leave me open with a wound vac and they're transporting me to my ICU room and they stop, they wheel me out and stop right outside the OR room. And with my eyes taped shut, they let my husband kiss me on my forehead. And so they are just, you know, they get me to the ICU and my ICU nurse is just working her butt off all night long. She doesn't sit down once. She's hanging blood after blood after blood products. And the day shift nurse who calmed the storm, who came in to run the code, she stays past her day shift till midnight to sit outside the chapel to be with my husband. And 2 days later, I wake up in ICU. And I have one of my good friends right here next to me. And I remember my arms were restrained. And I remember me just like, they were finally loosened and I pulled them up and I thought, oh my God, like my hand was just so swollen from all the blood products. And I thought, okay, just don't look at it. And she said, okay, they're about to pull the tube. Just stay calm. And we hadn't found out the gender to this baby because we have two healthy girls at home. And I thought, you know, we're probably just going to have another girl, like no big deal. I'll just be a girl mom, whatever. And so as soon as they pulled the tube, like the first question that I asked was, what is it? And they said a boy. And so that was like my happy ending, I guess you could say.
Wow.
So, oh, man, God, I mean, that's absolutely harrowing. Because, you know, how much of the, do you remember any of this? Like, do you have any recollection of like all the action that was happening or were you like blacked out this whole time? Like,
yeah. And what does it feel like?
Yeah. Like what did, yeah.
So they talk about when you're about to die, a sense of doom. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but you have a sense of doom rush over your body that you know that nothing is going to work. In hindsight, looking back, I started to lose consciousness. Like my photographer, who is one of, you know, is my best friend, she got there to take pictures of my delivery. And I remember hitting my husband and be like, "Hey, have you texted her? Like, I think I'm about to start pushing." And he just looked at me and was like, "She's right there." And I thought, oh God, like, I don't even remember her going in front of me. And then, you know, just the sense of doom was the biggest thing for me. Another like out of body experience, you know, I get that question a lot. Did you have an out of body experience? And I would say my out of body experience was me. I really do picture me looking. I remember looking out the window and seeing my OB doctor and the resident running across the parking lot. And that was it. Other than that, you know, there was three like things that really almost like I say prepared me for it, which again, hindsight looking back is I had told my husband before all this happened, you know, hey, if something happens, I need you like to advocate for me. And he was like, well, what does advocate mean? You know, he's in the business world. He's not medical field or anything like that. And I said, it means if I cannot speak, I need you to speak for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had taken care of a intubated patient in PACU. And I remember it was this cute little old lady and she just had a bunch of like all these little white chin hairs. And I called my best friend over there and I was like, hey, if I am ever intubated, I want to still look good on the ventilator. Like I need you to plug this chin hair. Okay.
Yeah. That's what you care about.
Right.
I'm like, sometimes I see people getting like videos on TikTok and they wake up and I'm like, please don't take videos of me if I look like that and put it on the internet. I would be really upset about that. Yeah. I'd be like, guys, come on, like a better angle. It's always like below your chin too, isn't it? It's always like up your chin. And I'm like, that's not how I want to be remembered.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, really like real talk, like, yes, I was telling her about that. Then it led into like deeper conversations of like, well, hey, what's your wishes on the ventilator? You know, so we had this in-depth conversation of what we wanted when we were on the ventilator and what that looked like for our spouse. And then third thing was that month I picked the book of Matthew in the Bible to talk about. And in the book of Matthew, it talks about all of God's miracles, like walking on water, healing the blind and everything. Well, in this one chapter, it talks about, I don't know if you'll know this, but it talks about this father runs up to Jesus and was like, hey, my daughter just died. I need you to bring her back to life. And, you know, he goes over there and he brings her back to life and he goes back to the father and was like, she was just merely sleeping. And I thought, it really stuck out to me that whole week. I was like, I don't ever remember him bringing back anyone to life besides him coming back to life. And so anytime when I say like, what does death feel like? You know, it felt like I had just been merely sleeping. Like I am not scared of death anymore because I do know what it feels like during that moment. And it was so quick and you leave everything. Like you don't even take the clothes on your back. You absolutely leave this earth.
Yeah. So I have a question. So you said that you didn't, because my biggest fear about death is nothing, right? Like that's, so before I go to bed and I have these existential thoughts, it's not that I'm like, I'm going to die and there's going to be this great afterlife and we're all going to be hunky-dory having a great time together. It's that like, what if it's nothing, right? And what if there's nothing? It's just nothing. I can't really explain it. So I guess like what makes me feel safe and feel better is when I hear these stories and I hear, well, I did see the white light and I did see, you know, God's hand or Jesus's hand, like pulling me up. And what scares me is when maybe what you said, which is there's nothing because you're saying that you didn't see the white, like you don't.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like when you go, well, although you do dream when you go, when you have surgery, a lot of people do. But so when you lost consciousness and flatlined and then woke up, you don't remember anything between that.
Mm-mm. Besides me looking out the window and seeing my out of body experience of them running to get to me. Other than that.
So does that make you feel more like it strengthens your faith or does it confuse you? Because you were expecting something to happen if you had quote unquote died.
I think what strengthened my faith is the fact that when the ER doctor, I was so angry at God after this happened. Like I couldn't look at my Bible. I was not going to church. Like we all want to be there when our baby's born. We want to hear them say, oh, it's a boy. Like that, those were the things I was looking for. But when the ER doctor reached out to me and said, I felt something pulling me up out of my chair to get to you. And he had talked about him going off of his journey of faith. That's what like it clicked. And then going back to me reading that chapter in the Bible and that specific chapter was just so clear to me. Like, cause that's exactly how I felt was I had felt like I had just been merely sleeping. So if anything, I think it made it just, it guaranteed that there is an afterlife And it's not just nothing for your question.
I think it's interesting too. Well, first of all, thank goodness that you were in a hospital and you were able to have like medical intervention, because I know that's, especially with like birthing and, you know, the trends nowadays, a lot of people have their kids like at a birthing center or at home, you know, or all these different locations, which I do think it is each person's individual choice and journey and what's right for somebody. For somebody else might not be right for me. I mean, for me, I know that I wanted to be in the hospital. I'm like 100% because I'm too much of a worrywart anyway. I'm like, if something goes wrong, I want to have like every doctor, nurse, medical intervention available. So was that like ever a consideration? Were you ever thinking, oh, I'm not going to have, you know, I would do a birth somewhere else. And I mean, how do you feel about that kind of thing?
Yeah. So it being my third baby and still being 29 and healthy, I knew a midwife here in town. And I thought, oh, I would, you know, I love the pictures of on Instagram and social media, how they're like, oh, this is beautiful, this home birth and everything about it. But I knew to my core that that would not be me. And being a nurse and working in the hospital and seeing so many things that can just happen in a blink of an eye, just so rare, but still happen. I was like, there's no way. If anything happens, I want to be in a hospital who people, you know, with people that can react quick and get me there. Because even though I was inside a hospital, it still took them, you know, from start to finish, it still took them 7 minutes for everything to rescue him out and all of that. And I feel like that's the time it would take for somebody just to get to my house or to the birth center to make their way to the hospital, because then I could be brain dead or my kid could have cerebral palsy, you know, just from the lack of oxygen. I am all for choice though. I do believe, you know, whatever you feel is best for you, definitely weigh the pros and cons and everything. So I'm all for having choices, but I am not, I would not be a home birth or birth center. I'm actually a doula now, and I won't do any birth centers or home birth. I feel like women really need me in the hospital for advocacy. And since I'm so used to talking to nurses and doctors, I feel like I can help them the best there.
I mean, I almost had a home birth or like a birthing center, because I really did subscribe to this, you know, belief that, you know, babies should be and mothers should be in this environment that is very calming. And it feels the most like honest for your body. And, you know, my first birth, she was 10 pounds, had the cord wrapped around her neck and was breech. And we didn't know that she had the cord wrapped around her neck until she came out and we ended up having a C-section. But imagine I had been in a birthing center and was like, well, she's breached. And I know there's, you know, a lot of people that know how to deliver breech babies, and they're telling me that it's going to be okay in a birthing center or a home birth. And I think if we had given birth in that way, one of us would have died. There's no way, because she couldn't descend. So the cord was wrapped three times around her neck. There would have been a massive emergency situation. And again, I'm also pro-choice when it comes to birthing your baby, but I just sometimes think, is it worth even that 5% risk? Is it worth it? I don't know. To me, it just wasn't.
No, I don't think it is. There's too many things that could go wrong, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I 100% agree. But, you know, I mean, we like to have our choices. So we put that out there. But do I think it's safe? No, absolutely not. I mean, I want to be here for my baby. I want to be here for my family. And if anything could go wrong, like, I think the fastest would be in a hospital. I do get how people say, you know, like, well, some people don't get the best care in a hospital, or their surgery, their OB was bad, or they had an awful nurse. But, you know, learning your steps on like advocating for your own self is huge, right?
That's so important too. Like, I mean, I know you probably weren't in the position to do it at that stage in the game, but I think I was looking at your social and you had told your husband, right, to advocate for you in case you couldn't speak, you know, which I think was probably a game changer, because that's probably what he did in that situation. I mean, how was he through all of this? Was he just kind of, you know, what was he doing throughout this whole thing?
He knew to call my friend that I had talked about on the ventilator. with. So he called her, in which she was a nurse. And the best person to advocate for you is a nurse. If you have a friend that's a nurse and you're going through something crazy, if you have a nurse friend, have them there because they know the lingo so well. Because at one point they did tell her, like, you know too much, you know, and they were scared shitless about her getting sued and everything like that, because it can come down to everything like that. And we didn't do anything. We had two amazing outcomes. We didn't sue, but he was a wreck. He said he didn't eat that whole time he was there. And they had told him, you know, she's not out of the woods yet. Like, he just really said that he prayed a lot. He has like two rosaries that he was with. He was in the chapel a lot. He was by my side. He was having to go back and forth to my son, to me, you know. And at one point, because I always asked him, you know, how did you find out what the gender was? Like, I always pictured me seeing your face of finding out. And he said that when they took him to ICU or to the NICU, he walked in there and there was two nurses over him and just like drying him off and everything. And he already had a diaper on. And he asked them, so like, what is it? And they looked at each other and they kind of were like, oh, I don't remember. So they pull the diaper on and he sees, you know, his penis and, and he just falls to the ground.
It's a boy.
And cries like, yay, not another vagina. Like, you
know. Yeah, exactly. That's what my husband wishes. He's like, if we have another child, we're not having another vagina. There's too many. And then our dogs were all girls too. He's like, there's too many women in this house.
So that was the point too. Like, I was so prepared to be a girl mom, like either way, you know.
I know, I thought that too.
Yeah. Since we didn't find out the gender, you know, when you're pregnant, did y'all have vivid dreams being pregnant?
Yes.
So one of my dreams was, since I never found out, I was envisioning, like, dreaming that I brought home this baby from the hospital, still didn't know the gender. And I was so scared to open the diaper just to see what it is. Like, from the hospital, not knowing what the gender is of your baby.
I definitely didn't have those dreams, but I definitely had like, what does it look like down there? No, I didn't. But I definitely had like I just knew, I thought it was a boy actually. That's wrong. But then I kept dreaming she was a girl. My second, I kept dreaming she was a girl, but I kept thinking she was a boy, to the point where when I got my scan back, I sent it to my husband. I circled this thing that I thought was a little penis. And I said, it's definitely a boy. And I think it was just like her finger sign or like, just like an extra toe. I don't know. But it definitely was not a penis.
That definitely happens too. I think that they can like mistaken, because I've heard stories where they say it's like a boy and then it comes, they are all bought the whole nursery, got all the clothes, like did everything. And then it's a girl, and that can happen, you know?
So for all our listeners who don't know what an amniotic emblem, say that three times. Amniotic embolism. Say that. Can you say it for me?
Amniotic fluid embolism.
Why can't I say that? Embolism. Foxy, you say it.
Embolism. Amniotic fluid embolism.
Yeah,
because that's because you have a doctor as a dad.
It's true.
You're probably
cheating
heard it
a little
like
bit.
Six times. Okay. So what is it? And like, is there things that women can do to pregnant women can do to look out for it? Is it just like, I almost had a uterine rupture, which is a whole another kettle of fish, but you know, I guess they could have monitored me for that in the hospital for months before. So can you explain what it is and how, you know, pregnant women can be prepared?
Yeah, absolutely. So an amniotic fluid embolism, it happens in 1 in 40,000 women, which they say it's rare, but to me, nothing will ever be rare again. I think if hospital prepares for everything to be rare and on their toes for everything, I think it helps, you know, your chances of survival. So an amniotic fluid embolism, an AFE, is when the amniotic fluid gets into the mom's bloodstream and causes an anaphylactic reaction. So it either, you know, signs and symptoms can be seizures, loss of consciousness, cardiac arrest, which that was mine, cardiac arrest. And then early intervention, there's no prevention, unfortunately, there's no prevention, but early like recognition is key for this. So if women can just really speak up and, you know, tell them their signs and symptoms, like, and nurses and doctors are trained in this stuff, which they should be, then that is what's going to decrease the mortality rate of an AFE. Does that make sense? Does that help a little bit of what that does? I mean, it's unfortunately, yeah, it's just, it's unpreventable. I wish there was a cure. I wish we could just give a drug and that person could just come right back. But unfortunately, the events happen so fast. Like for me, you know, it, I just, all of a sudden I felt nauseous and hot, which I had on my other two babies, but I was losing consciousness, you know, like maybe if my husband would have known, like, hey, Nicole, like, are you okay? She did step in front of you, you know, and just really telling the nurse, but that nurse has to be on her game too, you know, and not just being like, oh, hey, well, that's okay. You're having a baby that, you know, it comes with nerves. No, she needs to be asking like, well, do you, you know, is your, does your chest feel heavy? Like explain to me more what you're feeling, you know, and really getting in depth with those questions as well. But hospitals should be training on AFE scenarios. The hospital that I was at, you know, it's so crazy. Y'all heard of all the things that like went wrong. And I am like a miracle that I really am here with my family, but I, you know, they had no code team. And I think every hospital should have a code team. Like your dad, tell them that. And it's like, oh my God, what? And it's not like I'm in a rural area. I live in Colorado Springs. Like this is a big city. How do you not have a code team? You know, there was protocols that were changed after me. So there is a code team now, and they do require a OB hospitalist on deck at all times. So those are the questions for, you know, future moms or, you know, pregnant moms right now to be asking, like, hey, do y'all have a code team at your hospital? What level of trauma care is your facility? You know, how big is your NICU? And, you know, do y'all require a OB hospitalist on deck at all times or not? Because that was the other issue, is there was no OB on deck. He was practicing, his office was in the parking lot, but every second counts in a code. So him, you know, running down the stairs of his floor, running across the parking lot, him going up four flights of stairs at my hospital, I mean, that's minutes off of my life, right? When if an OB hospitalist was there, he could come in bedside and cut right at bedside.
That's wild. Cause I would think like on labor and delivery, like on the floor, you know, they would have like an OB, but, you mentioned that you had a partial hysterectomy, removal of your uterus and your ovary. So were you planning on having more kids after the third one, or is it like now that that's kind of happened, is there still like, you know, I mean, there's obviously other ways to have children as well. But did that kind of change things for you?
I think going in, we had thought, okay, I know this is my last, but only, you know, I had three before 30 for kids. And then, you know, my other friends were having babies. My son is actually just now, he's going to be starting kindergarten in August. I do have those thoughts of like, I don't know, like exactly what y'all were saying earlier, you know, I don't know if it's just the age thing or what, but I am mourning the baby stage, the toddler stage. Like, what do I do with my life? It's kind of like the limbo right now for me, because my time as a stay at home mom partially is expiring, you know?
So. I know. I'm not saying for you, but like mine's 4.5 and I witness her face and I just look at it and I'm like, I can't bear for her face to change anymore. I don't know if you have that feeling, but I guess it's like when, you know, my other child is 9, 10. And so obviously I see her growing into a young adult and that's painful, but I feel it's really difficult when they change from like a baby to a, like a little girl and their facial features are changing and they're just not a baby anymore. And, and my littlest one has her little nanai, we call it. And she holds it at night. And that's going to pass, you know, and everything passes. And I know that, but I feel like nostalgia and the sense of nostalgia is a really I know people might like the feeling. I don't like the feeling of nostalgia. I don't like the feeling of seeing my kids when they were babies. It doesn't make me feel like, oh, look at them, they were so cute. It makes me miss it, you know? And I feel like I'm in the stage where I'm just about to feel that feeling like I'm missing it. And yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I want another child, is just like, I want that to keep going. But I have to tell myself, you can't have small children for the rest of your life. Like, at some point it's going to stop. Like, that's what my husband says. He goes, but then the third child will grow up, then the fourth child will grow up. And I'm like, yeah, but at least it's more of that for a longer period of time. That's my theory anyway.
I feel the exact same way. I am the same way, because some parents are like, oh, I can't wait till all my kids are in school and I get this free time back. And I'm completely opposite. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good date with my husband, just us, to like recharge. But I also love, you know, being at home with the kids for the summer and taking them to go do summer activities and just soaking up all of the little stages that are just so precious to us. So I'm like you, I could have so many kids if I could, but my whole motto is babies don't keep. And that's what has helped me, because they don't.
But dogs do. So you guys, it's all about having dogs.
But they only live for 10 years. I know. Well, sometimes 10 to 15 years.
That's
so
the sad part. I'm like,
no, dogs do.
Yeah, it's so sad. I know, it's hard, because it's like you guys are saying. I mean, it is sad to see them kind of like change like this, but it's also kind of exciting too, because like now my daughter just turned 9 and I feel like she's now, you know, she's pretty self-sufficient, but I'm actually kind of excited for how I'm hoping we have a good relationship in the teenage years. But I mean, I'm kind of excited to see where that goes, you know, like, are we going to be really close? You know, like, are we going to do fun, like mommy daughter trips? Are we going to, you know what right. I mean? Like the, there are exciting things to come too, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. That is such a good way to look at it. Cause I have an 11-year-old and just the difference between the 11-year-old and then my 5-year-old, I also have a 7-year-old in between there too, but you know, I do tell her, like, we don't have to be like that mother and daughter who don't get along. Like, we can have a great relationship, you know, and it is cool seeing her grow that way. But I think because the decision was made for me and not by me, like I have no choice. I know I don't want to adopt, like that's for sure. But I'm done. I have to be done. So it's helping me get into this transition easier than what it is for you, I think. I'm like, well, maybe should I have another one? Like just one more, you know, or it being scared that I may have birth, you know, having something like that happen again. Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, no, it's hard. It's all hard. He starts kindergarten. We already start school July 31st here.
Oh, wow. That's early.
No, we have a fall break though. Okay. So for 2 weeks in October, but I'm already like crying about it, because he's going to kindergarten and it's my last.
It's such a big step. I know it's a loss, right? I can't, you know, you can't really explain it until you go through it, but it's just a loss. And I'm there with my littlest but me too, you know, I had a uterine rupture. There's so when you get a C-section, for anyone who doesn't know, they obviously stitch you up internally. And what can happen is when you have another baby after you've already had a C-section, that baby can, they can grow. And my kids are always so big. It normally happens with bigger babies. They can actually push through that uterine wall and into, I mean, you're a nurse, right? Am I explaining this right? And into your stomach. So that baby can ultimately end up in your stomach. And there's no real symptoms for that. You just end up, you know, dying, because you can't have a baby in your stomach and the baby can't live in your stomach. And there's no real way to know that it's going to happen unless they're monitoring you in the hospital. And so when I had Lennon, I thought everything was fine. And afterwards, when, you know, I've obviously on so many drugs when you have a C-section and you're awake. And when I started coming off the drugs, the doctor came in and he said, look, you know, we could have had a really bad emergency situation here. And I was like, well, that's crazy. The baby's here. What do you mean? And he said, Lennon's face was, you could see her face almost through that wall. He said, if you had laughed in some kind of, you know, intense way before, just before you gave birth, or like a week ago, Phoenix, who's my first daughter, would have jumped on me or I would have slipped or anything, Lennon would have ended up in my stomach. And I didn't know how close it was. I didn't know about this at all, but I didn't even know how close it was until he told me. And he said, we could see her face, like her face was coming through. And so it isn't safe, I don't think, for me to have a third child, you know, but because it didn't end badly, like yours did. And because I didn't know about it, it's almost like I've put it to the back burner. And I haven't gone through the same trauma that you've been through, because don't you have, I mean, I had a little bit of post-traumatic trauma from my first child because I never thought I was going to have a C-section. Obviously, again, it didn't end up like what happened to you, but it was very intense for what I thought the whole experience was going to be. Did you have post-traumatic stress, post-traumatic trauma after your third child was born, that like you would wake up and have panic or anxiety or depression? Did you go through those emotions afterwards, or did you have a new baby, obviously, that you just had to focus on that you couldn't really think about that?
Yeah, no, uterine rupture is really serious. That's scary. Yeah. You definitely could have died. That's so scary. So when I got home, you're in the motion of, that was with your second baby, you said?
So I had C-section with both, but the second baby, I didn't know I was that close to a uterine rupture until she was out.
Okay. So, you know, getting out and then you knowing you have to take care of the other baby, I felt like my other one wasn't just two yet. So she was turning two the following month when I got home. And then I had my 5-year-old that was at home as well. And my husband's an entrepreneur, and you know, if he doesn't work, he's not going to make money. So he had to fly out to LA and go work just a week after. So I was just like in the trenches of God, I have to hold myself together. So I feel like I had delayed a trauma response, and it happened, I would say, a year out from everything. Once the 1-year mark happened, I was having a lot more emotions. Of course, I was crying between, you know, 0 and 1. They had me on all the pain medications, and I was drinking some beer as well. Like, I mean, I was pretty depressed with it. But I think pregnant women, you know, seeing a pregnant woman, every time the thought would go through my head, I hope you don't die. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was having these vulgar like thoughts like that. And it has taken definitely, you know, time to heal. And now that I'm 5 years out, my whole therapy has been to get back into the delivery room and to help these moms with their experiences and help them have an amazing birth. But I'm also, you know, I worked in pediatric ICU. So I saw some of the most saddest scenarios. And you know how y'all were talking about like things come in threes, and that's how it is in the hospital too, with deaths. Like deaths come in threes. And I would just think of like some of those patients that I had that didn't make it, or some that, you know, were close to death. And I just thought, but I did make it. I'm here and I'm so thankful. But I definitely had those stages of grief, like you were saying. You know, I had PTSD and everything. Finally got a therapist like 4 years out. If you can do it earlier, the better. And, you know, also advising like a life coach. I don't know if y'all are into the life coach, but I feel like a life coach can bring in, you know, positive things for you too, like goals and stuff.
I'm Roxy's life coach.
Yes. Tamman gives me a lot of life coaching.
I know. I do.
I love a good life coach. So, but yeah, no, it was hard. It's definitely hard. It was hard. And I think the survivorversary every time on his birthday is like a rebirth for me. Yeah. But you can, you know, you can hate, like I hate the day that my son was born, but I love it at the same time. So knowing and accepting that you can have two of those feelings at the same time, that's completely normal and that's fine.
What was it like too? Cause you say, you know, you're working as a doula now, helping women in like labor and delivery. What was it like stepping back into the delivery room for the first time after you went through this? Like, was it hard? Was it traumatic? Were you getting like flashbacks of like what you went through? Like, how was that and how'd you handle it?
I think I was more on high alert, like, okay, I'm looking for signs and symptoms for the mom, more of the background stuff, like ICU stuff, things that she's feeling, things that she's saying, and just really tuning into her. And I'm in the room with her the whole time where the nurse is stepping out, you know, every so often, every 2 hours comes back in. And I felt, honestly, it wasn't a scary situation for me. I just felt like I'm on my game, I'm focused, and I'm ready to go.
Okay. Wow. That takes a lot of strength though, you know?
I think, you know, coming from the medical field, we're such a different breed.
Mm.
And your dad would say the same, I bet. Like, you know, you see so many different codes and different things. It kind of just, you build up a thick skin in a way.
You have to. It's the only way you can
survive, right?
Continue and survive and be in that. And also save other people's lives. If you're thinking about your own mental health while someone is not doing very well, it's not going to behoove the patient, right? You have to. Well, I'm so grateful you shared our story. Our time is up with you, but please stay in touch with us. I follow all your TikToks and your Instagram reels. And I'm, you know, it's so wonderful to see somebody turn their pain into purpose. And that's a really big one for me. Like when you go through something, how can you help other people either not go through it or deal with the emotions that happen and anything physical afterwards, how you can be of service. So thank you so much for coming and please let everyone know where they can find you and if they want to find out more and if they want to hear more about your story.
Yeah. Thank you so, so much. So you can find me on my handle at Before You Push on TikTok, on Instagram. And I have a Facebook page as well too. Or if you go to my website at beforeyoupush.com, I have my services on there and everything. So yeah. But thank y'all so much for having me. This has been amazing. Y'all are amazing. I've been listening to y'all's podcast. Just so you know. Women on.
Sorry in advance. I always say, I apologize to people. I'm like, are you want to come on? Maybe don't listen to it before you go.
Yeah, we were a little rough in the beginning, but I.
Yeah, we were footing. Rough. I don't even know if we were rough. I think we were just, I don't really drink anymore. I think we were just drunk.
We were definitely drunk at the beginning.
We were definitely drinking. And I was so nervous about like being boring that I was like, just say everything. And now I'm like, oh gosh, what is going to come back to bite us at some point?
Oh my gosh, y'all are just so comfortable and like awesome to be around because I mean, I was looking you up too and you were on Pretty Little Liars and I watched Pretty Little Liars and I was kind of like,
that bitch that she seems to be. I'm a very nice person. I mean, Roxy might think differently. Roxy
depends on the day.
I wasn't even rude to you on my period this month, Roxy. I was like, good.
Yes, you were. You were. What have you been doing?
My period's over.
Oh,
my period's over.
Okay.
And you never even knew.
Never knew. Right. It came and it went. I mean, it was.
It just came in and out. That's what happens when you get old. I was like 3 days in, 3 days out. No, but I've been giving hell. My poor husband's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, do I have to spell it out again? I am menstruating. He's like, but does it mean you have to act like this? I'm like, yes, it does.
Yes. That's the only good thing about not having a uterus is I have no periods. I still ovulate, but having a period is amazing. And that's how men have it so easy. That's when it clicked. I'm like, y'all don't have to bleed every single month like we do, you know?
See, there is a silver lining, you know? I mean, that's kind of nice.
Cool. Yeah, it's so nice. But yeah.
Well, before you guys hear this, I'm like, right. There's construction outside. There are ambulances outside. So before I make our listeners just turn this show off because they're like, Tamin's sound is terrible with all the sound. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. We are Women on Top Official on Instagram
and Women on Top Podcast on Facebook and Women on Top Official on TikTok.
And I am Tamin Sursok.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are Women
on
Top. That's it.